Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Cindy DeFerdinand, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm Bruce Cameron, along with the lovely...
Thank you for calling Caliestis of the Addictions Coach.
Hey, everybody. But this lovely.
Hey, Bruce, how are you?
Cindy DeFerdinand, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you.
Yes.
Great to be here with you all today. And I think that we were waiting for a call-in, so maybe the station was calling back.
Yes, yeah, she's
Thank
she's
you for calling
call.
Caliestis of the Addiction.
Okay, so we'll keep that going. She'll pop in there. It's one of those tie things. I think she's trying to call and...
Yeah, maybe you could introduce her to our audience, and
we'll do that. So, folks, today
There she is.
There she is. Okay, Callie, are you there?
Hi, Callie.
I am. Hi, how are you?
Good. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
All right, sounding good. Well, perfect timing. We were just about ready to introduce you, and I'll take a stab at it, and then you can clean up after me, Callie. Here, I'll try not to botch it too bad. But folks, I had a chance to really kind of learn about Caliestis years ago, even before I formally got into the coaching profession. I have private psychotherapy practice and those things, and Callie has always been very active in the coaching community, the addiction recovery, addiction coaching community, and the thing that really first and foremost attracted me to her was, man, her social media presence, her LinkedIn page is just fantastic. So, you know, props to you and your social media exposure. She's just done a masterful job at that, but she is even more easy to talk to and down to earth than what's portrayed out there in the media. So she's just a really great person and covers such a lot of ground in this area. Not only what she does for clients, but what she even does for methodologies and businesses and those things. So, without further ado, Dr. Caliestis, ladies and gentlemen. How's that?
That's awesome. Thanks for the intro.
You're welcome. So, Callie, kind of give us an overview of maybe a little bit about what got you interested in the coaching field. And I know you're involved in a lot of different things, and just kind of talk about some of the high points on what you do, and we'll just kind of start it from there.
Yeah, a little bit of background.
Okay, sure. So I was first a clinician, so I was a therapist. And the one thing I noticed was therapy takes a long time, and it's not necessarily working for a lot of these clients. And on top of that, it's very low pay, long hours. And I kind of burn out, and I kind of said, there has to be something else. So I started studying coaching, and I started realizing it's quick, it's client-focused, and if the client doesn't do the work, now the blame doesn't fall on me as a therapist, it falls
right.
on the client.
Right. You know, that's interesting. It's interesting. I love that. I was so cut to the chase. That was such a perfect way to say it. I teach life coaching, and we get a lot of therapists, and they say the same thing, that they're amazed how quick the coaching process works. And also the other thing they point to, and maybe this was something that led you to coaching too, is you know, the regulation of a therapist, the accountability, the reporting part of it.
Yeah, well, I don't take insurance, so I've always been cash pay. But the regulations of having to be in an office in Miami, Florida, in a very specific location to do this was daunting because I have clients all over the world.
Right.
So that means I have to wait for them to fly in to me. I can't go to them. And half the time they would call me and say, well, can't you just have a session over the phone? And back then it was, well, no. Well, let me send you something by email. Well, you can't. Well, let me text you. You can't. So unless you're in front of me, I can't talk to you. And that became restrictive. And with coaching, I can have a session on a plane. I can be at the beach. I can go on a tour bus. I've been in, you know, the field at the NFL. It's so much more open, and I get so much more work done than I would if I was a therapist confined to a certain area.
Right, to office hours, so to speak, yeah. And
exactly.
It is really difficult when you have an office. You can only service, you know, maybe tops half hour, 45 minute radius. Whereas with coaching, as long as you're, you know, willing to work different time zones, it's the world, you know. So it just really opens it up. Yeah, that's great. So that was the primary reason. Was there somebody that nudged you to coaching, recommended you, thought you would be fabulous at it, that sort of thing? Like, you know, besides that, what triggered you into getting trained as a coach?
I wish I could say that, but the answer would be no. I totally decided on my own. I had had enough of my colleagues, per se. Everyone wants to sit around and theorize all these possible solutions to all these problems, but nobody's getting results. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of got fed up with it. And I said, there's got to be a better way. And then, you know, my specialty is addiction. I don't do trauma. I don't do mental health. I do addiction from a behavioral reward deficiency syndrome aspect.
Right.
So I'm very fast. I'm very intense. And therapy takes forever. So I really started to get my feet wet with the coaching, and I saw the results. And then I said, this is it. This is where I want to be. This is going to work for me.
Well, it sounds like you're very results oriented, and I come from a background in sales and marketing, and I love that coaching works quickly. People make so much progress in 60 to 90 days. You know, it's just fabulous, and they feel it, and they're very grateful, which is nice. And they do the work. I don't have to do the work. They come willing. They come at that turning point where they're willing to do something to move their life forward, and that I think that's why it works quickly.
Yeah, and then I'm not held, you know, hostage when they didn't do their homework and didn't do what they said they were going to do, because they're the ones that came up with the idea. And
right.
I love that. So now I'm not, you know, to blame.
Let me ask you something, because that just triggered a question. When you look at the coaching model, the coaching skill set, what is your favorite part of what you've learned as a coach in training, or, you know, actually, you know, practicing it in the field? What is your favorite thing?
The open-ended questions.
Okay.
Because in therapy, it's not open-ended. It's do you, will you? It's very closed-ended. In coaching, I was able to say, what are you going to do about this? So in therapy, a person comes to me with a problem such as, I hate my husband. So now as a therapist, I want to know why. But I'm going to ask 101 questions. We're not going to solve the issue. We'll join for next week. As a coach, I go, huh, interesting. What are you going to do about it? And then it makes them think, what am I going to do about it? It takes the ownership off of me and puts it on them. And then I get to use those powerful questions to get to the bottom of where we're trying to go.
Right.
I
and
love
drill,
that,
drill
right?
it, drill it down, drilling it down.
Yep. And then I love the fact that they claim ownership. In therapy, they don't. In therapy, they're helpless. They're coming to a therapist who is usually sitting across from them at a big desk, who has all the answers, who charges
right.
a lot of money, and it exudes a system of power. And I don't like that. In coaching, I'll sit with my clients on the floor if they want, and I don't even think about it, because it's about them. It's not about me. And there's a power struggle in therapy that I don't like.
Right. And when people go to a therapist, they're looking for somebody who's going to give them the answers, tell them what to do, solve the problem. And coaching, clients find out really quickly that they hold the answers, and we're just there to probe till they get there, you know, which is completely different. But it's so much more rewarding for the client. Let me ask you one more thing. If you had to pick one question that is your favorite question, what would it be? That you
well,
use.
It's a two-prong. I always say, where do you want to go and how do you want to get there?
Okay, that's good.
That's my favorite thing. Because in addiction, most people hate to plan. There's no planning. So they're thinking about what I'm going to do in the next minute, and I'm thinking about what you're going to do in the next year. So I love to be able to push them beyond the now. Because they always say, stay in the moment, stay in the moment. No, no, no. You've got to do more than stay in the moment. You've got to plan for what's next.
So I love that.
That's what I do.
That's great. That's
a good, yeah. I mean, I like that too, because when you have relapse prevention and harm reduction and those things, it's still plays out a little bit more than just living in the now. You know what I mean? Particularly if we're going to try to stay sober or remain abstinent. So, I just feel like we're just interrogating her, doesn't it, Cindy? We're just beating her with all these questions. But tell me your take here. I'll do it this way. I also do some recovery coaching and sober coaching and those things, and that's just an interesting field. I had come back from the Malibu area, and before that I was in the L.A. area, which is, you know, obviously south of that. And there's some pretty interesting schools of thought about how that goes down. And I'm pretty fluid with that, you know what I mean? And I was just kind of wanting to get your take on, you know, sober coaching versus recovery coaching. If you know, talk about the continuum of services that you and your squad might offer in that realm. I mean, do you guys do the sober coaching, sober companion, or is it recovery coaching? And then lastly, will you work with a client that's even still using?
Okay. So I'm a little bit unique, and I kind of paved my way, kind of came out the door swinging, if you will, being unique and being different. And I do harm reduction. I've always done harm reduction as a professional. So I do take people still using. I do help them get off drugs. I do it very non-conventionally. So I'm not into the, oh, my God, you're using, you need treatment, come to me when you're sober. No, you probably don't need treatment. If you've been to treatment 6 times, you don't need treatment. You can do treatment. You can't do life. You need me. I need you. Come to me. Let me help you. So I am very different in that regard. With the sober coach, sober companion, I don't like the whole untrained aspect with someone living in your house. I think all sober companions should be trained as recovery coaches, simply because there's more to this than just hanging out with someone, taking them to a meeting, keeping them sober.
That sounds like a caretaking role. That sounds more like caretaking than coaching.
Well, that sober companions to date have no required anything. So you don't have to be trained. You just have to be clean. And there's no proof of that. So we don't know, you know, people say I have 10 years clean. We don't know. It's, you know, it's their, you know, opinion or their fact, whatever. But for me, I prefer them to be trained. So we do offer sober companions. All of our sober companions are certified and trained as coaches. Most of them are cross-trained. In other areas, some of them were counselors in past lives. Some are international master's addictions coaches. So we have multiple layers of training. So there's nothing out there they can't handle. And then we offer something also very different. If I put somebody out there to do a sober companion gig, they also get therapy. We do therapy with them. We make sure they have a therapist in conjunction to the sober companion. It's not just the sober companion. They're seeing a therapist. They're checking in. They are doing regular drug testing. We put all those extra facets in to make sure the person gets sober. Because my tagline is, I look forward to the day you fire me. That means I did my job.
Right.
If you're still
with
me for a year, if you're still with me for a year or 2 years, there's something wrong with me, not you. Because I'm not doing my job, or I haven't said this isn't working.
Right.
So
I like that.
Big on that.
Well, I like that. I like that.
What is your focus in the business personally? Do you do maybe? I know you talked about the team approach, and you have sober companions, and you do the drug testing and make sure there's therapy available or referred to. And what is the personal role you take as a coach, where you spend most of your time with your clients?
It depends on the client. My specialty specifically is narcissism, and most of my clients are men. They're mostly high-powered executives, and most of them are, the drugs of choice are cocaine and women. So that's my specialty. I do a lot of NFL, NBA, CEOs, musicians, actors that fall into that category, and not just personally, professionally. For whatever reason.
So may or may not be addicted, but are narcissists.
All of mine are addicted.
Okay.
I specialize truly in addiction. And even if they're addicted to the lifestyle of narcissism, there's something hidden behind it. Drugs, okay. alcohol, gambling, girls, boys, whatever. There's something there usually that the precursor to the downfall that they're about to walk into. And that's usually what I get called. I get called right before things go to hell.
Right. The wheels come off.
Mm. Yeah.
Right.
With these more narcissistic clients, I mean, do they have to come to the end of themselves, or how, you know, are you able to head that off as a coach and just really kind of get them on a path, or help them choose a path that is just more honoring and more aware of others? How does that usually play out? I know every case is different, but.
It depends on the client. If they've contacted me, they want to change. They know there's a piece of their personality they don't like. Sometimes I'll get contacted by the employer. For example, the football team will call me and basically say, the player's representative will call me and say, we need help with this person. So they don't necessarily want my help, but the bottom line is you're going to lose your job if you don't take my help. So it becomes, in the beginning, it's kind of like, well, you know, I'll do this because I have to. And then I make it enjoyable and fun. And then they say, I love this.
That's
then they
great.
Make changes. And then they stick around. So that's usually what happens.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and that's, I'm familiar with that paradigm too, with some of the corporate coaching I do, where it's kind of almost an internal affairs type of referral, you know what I mean? Versus, hey, I need coaching. There's some sort of trouble. Either in the chemical zone or a sexual harassment zone or some other cluster of issues that are impeding their performance, you know, and then the company is interested in getting them back on their feet and obviously performing, because at the bottom line with companies, most of the time it is about performance and the subsequent revenue. So, so that's,
and I guess initially it's that
business
winning their confidence.
Go ahead,
Sandy. Well, I was just thinking that, you know, like she was saying that some call on their own, and that's fabulous. That's the client you want. But if they're not willing initially to, you know, show them what coaching is about and how casual and how much it works for them. And building their trust, that's so key, so that they see the benefit and they want to stay and they want to work with you. How long does that process normally take, or is that pretty individual in terms of how many walls somebody has up to where you're able to get their confidence and let them know it's an enjoyable process that's going to help them?
Usually within the first hour.
That's
because
wonderful.
I'm very unique. I'm 5'2". I'm about 120 pounds, and I command a presence when I come in the room. So I start off with that. I lead with my strength, and I don't allow them to start their process of running the game. And they find that intriguing because they go, huh, this is different. You know, this is not normally how it goes. Then they want to figure out what just happened because now they're confused. So then they sit down and play ball because now they're trying to figure out what's happening. And by the time they're catching on to what's going on, I'm joking and I'm sarcastic and I'm, you know, playing into some of what they're saying. So I've got their attention. To give you an example, I have a high-profile client. He pulled up in an Aston Martin. And me being me, I looked at it and I said, what is that thing, a Bentley? And he looks at me and goes, a Bentley? That's an Aston Martin, top of the line, special edition. I said, it looks like a Corvette. You live in Miami. You could have at least done better than a Corvette. It was our very first meeting. And he goes, I like you. I said, of course you do. Let's go have a talk. So that took him off guard because he came in, nice car, Armani suit, you know, the whole showboating. And I didn't play into any of it. And he expected me to compliment him on the suit or the car or something. And I simply just disregarded it. And by doing that, I had his attention. And this is somebody who's a billionaire, who runs multiple level companies. And after that, he couldn't wait for our sessions because he couldn't figure me out. And it was driving him crazy of how I was able to do this. It's very simple for me, but for him, it was, you know, unique.
Okay. I think you should have drove up in that Dallas Cowboy blue golf cart of yours.
I like my Dallas Cowboys
man,
golf cart. Thank you.
That is a beast, man. I tell you what, I'll be looking for that thing if I ever make it out to the East Coast. That's a beautiful vehicle you got there. Anyway, well, that's now. So you caught this guy off balance, right? You got the conversation started. Kind of walk us through a little bit of so then he what did you do, a 360 evaluation? Did he just identify goals? What did you do? What were the next couple of steps, if you don't mind sharing?
Sure. Well, his major predominating issue was he was sent to me by work, and his issue was he has a slight cocaine problem starting to get out of hand.
Slight.
Starting to become.
Yeah.
Love your use of words.
Yeah.
If he didn't get it under control, he was probably going to get fired. Mm-hmm. And what he had done was he created a company and was able to do some things within this company that were extraordinary. So he had always ridden that. And now the new purchasers of the company wanted something different. So they had called me and they said, okay, you know, we've evaluated him. Our psychiatrists have met with him. We don't see mental health. You know, he's a great asset to our team. However, because of the acquisition and the mergers, we're going to let him go. And wow. Unless you can, you know, fix this. And I said, well, what's the presenting problem? Well, he would throw these parties. And they were lavish. They were extravagant. And I said, okay, so still, what's the problem? And they said, well, the last party got raided, and we had to keep it out of the tabloid. I said, okay, so what did he do that got raided? Well, that's when I got the whole story. And when I got the whole story, I said, all right, send him over. He comes over, and I'm working with him, and his issue was, you know, there was a lot of underlying stuff, but the big thing was he never had consequence in his life. He never lost anybody. He never got fired. He never lost any money. He never had a problem. So being told you might not be part of this company wasn't even computable to him. He's like, what does that mean? Well, they're going to fire you. No, they won't. I'm untouchable. I'm invincible. You know, so that was the mentality. So what I explained to him was that's the mentality of most of the clients I get. And some of them who don't, you know, play ball end up fired. And I was able to give him an example of an NFL player that I worked with that ended up getting fired. You know, and he had a lot of $1 million on a contract because he simply didn't want to stop using drugs. And they tested him and he was positive. And finally they said, you're done. Goodbye. You know, these are the rules. You're out. Same mentality. So I was able to show him some of that stuff. And I Googled a lot of the different, you know, CEOs that have been fired for drug use. This is going to be you. This is going to be you. Eventually he said, okay. And listen to what I had to say. And I said, now, what do you want to do? How do you want to handle this? You're the CEO of your own life. How do you want to take the reins and be the best you? And he kind of stared at me. And I'm like, what do you want to do? You know, what's on your bucket list? And he said, I don't have a bucket list. And I said, oh, my goodness, we're going to create a bucket list. So we created a bucket list. So it was like he detached from his life, like on autopilot. And as we started to make a bucket list, and he started to say, there are some really cool things I want to do. And they didn't involve girls, and they didn't involve cocaine. We started to put those into play. And those became some goals. Because he came and he's like, I've done everything. I've seen every state in America. I've been all over Europe. I've been all over South Africa. I've been to every safari there is. I've been a game hunter. He goes, I've got nothing to do. Okay. Well, when I started asking him, you know, have you done this? Have you done that? He started to say, well, you know, there is a few things I want to do. He had never gone on a picnic. And I said, you've never been on a picnic. He said, no. And I said, let's put that on his bucket list. So his homework assignment was to take his wife on a picnic. And he goes, I don't even know where to go to buy a picnic basket. Or what do you put in the picnic? Like, he had no idea. So that became kind of a joke of like, well, you could make millions of dollars but can't figure out what kind of cheese goes in a picnic basket, you know? And he kind of enjoyed that. And he was so out of his realm, but yet he had me as a guidance. And he's like, so what do I put in it? I'm like, food, whatever you want, in the picnic basket. So things like that. It's being able to think outside the box with the client and not push them, but kind of meet them where they are.
Okay. And how did you turn the screw to get the cocaine use addressed?
Well, I believe that drug use isn't the problem. It's the solution to a problem. Mm-hmm. And if you can figure out
that
what
is
the
so
problem
right.
is.
Yep.
and you deal with the problem, organically, the drug use goes down. And a lot of people like that because I'm not even going to address the drug use. I'm going to address all the other crap that's happening.
Right. You're not focusing on it.
Exactly. As we start working on that, the use and the need to use goes down.
Right. Yeah, I always call that getting underneath it. You know, you're getting one layer underneath something, you know, what needs are unmet, you know. I'm a clinical nutritionist, and that's one of the things I ask people, you know, because there's something underneath it that's leading to them to go to food as the solution.
Exactly.
So what are some of the questions you might pose to somebody who's using drugs or food or women or, you know, or sex? And what are some of the things you ask? What are the prime questions to kind of get underneath why they're doing it?
Well, I have a series of exercises that I developed into a workbook, and I give them different exercises. The first one I ask them is timeline. And you can ask somebody, you know, how old were you when you started using drugs? And they usually pick an age, 12, 16, 20, whatever. But timeline is a homework exercise I give them to go home and do, and they draw a line, and they put all of their positive events above the line and all the negative events below the line from age 5 to now. The older they are, the more paper you need. And they bring it back. And there's two things I learned right away. I learned how old they really were when they started using drugs, and right before that event, I also see what kicked it off. There's always an event. Even the people who say nothing happened, something happened. And it may have been they watched their dog get killed. It may be parents divorced. It may be my dad called me a stupid name. It could be anything. But something happened that their coping mechanism to deal with that event became drugs and alcohol. So that's the first thing I do. So I get an idea of what's going on. And then I have about 10 different exercises I give them. One of them, circle of influence. So I know who the key players are in their lives. And I give them lots of homework so when they come back to the next session, they vested time. They have 2 to 3 hours of homework in their life. And they come back and they say, wow, I did this exercise. I couldn't do it. I had one gentleman, I was trying not to laugh, but I was laughing. He's 35, and he brought his homework back in a crumpled ball in his pocket that had gone to the wash. And he set it on the table, and I said, oh, we have failure to launch, don't we? And he goes, what? And I'm like, where is your homework? And he goes, it's in the ball. And I just looked at him. I said, all right, I'll see you next week. And he goes, what? And I'm like, well, I'm not going to work harder than you. You didn't do your homework. I'll see you next week. And he just looked at me. He goes, you're kicking me out? I said, you didn't do your homework. We had nothing to talk about. I'll see you next week. So I have a very, very different approach where I make them accountable for everything. Now, that same gentleman came back the next week, not only with a notebook, he had bought a portfolio. A leather portfolio to put his notebook in and pen so he wouldn't lose his homework.
That's nice.
So it's things like that. It's very simple little things that create behavioral changes in the client without me having to say anything like, really? Did you really put that in your pocket and put it in the wash? It was that important? I didn't have to say any of that. I just said, I'll see you next week. Not important to you, not important to me. And it simply sent the message that this is not, I'm not going to work harder than you at getting somewhere for your life.
And that is coaching in a nutshell. If you're working too hard, you're doing something wrong as a coach.
Exactly.
Yeah, I like that failure to launch notion. It kind of reminds me of, even though he was in his 30s, it reminds me of some of my 20, early, mid-20 somethings that are still stuck at home and doing that, you know, like you said, the college dropout and the 20-something and others that don't quite go from dependence to independence, you know. So I know you do that line of work as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. If you guys have ever seen The Biggest Loser and Jillian Michaels, mm-hmm. I'm like that in the addiction industry. That's sort of how I am.
That's pretty cool. I was going to ask you, I know you have a lot of different credentials and so, and I'm always learning. I know what NADAC is. What is that? AAAISMA. I've heard of that. What is that?
Oh, that's my personal training in yoga. I'm certified as a personal trainer, yoga teacher, and Pilates teacher. So I meld a lot of stuff with my clients. I tell them up front, if you don't want to quit smoking and sugar, don't call me. I'm not the coach for you. I'm going to take you off all this stuff. And we're going to talk about how sugar affects the brain like cocaine. And we're going to talk about how you detox like heroin. And it's kind of interesting. So I come with it with that side of it, the nutritional side of it, the exercise side of it. It's a little bit different.
Okay. No wonder I didn't know what that is, because I'm not quite down here in Texas. So we're just like, what the heck is that? What's IC and RC has the globe with it? IC and RC.
ICRC is international for therapists. So if we're, for example, I'm certified to the state of Florida, which is the CAP, and I want to transfer it, you take an ICRC, which makes you global. So I am internationally certified as an addiction professional.
Okay, got you on the addiction side. Okay, I didn't know if that was a coaching thing or an ICF looking thing or anything like that. Another thing I want to make the plug for you. I'm a member. I don't know if you're a member, but I'm a member of the Recovery Coaches International. Took a while to come out there, and I was having a block there. Anyway, so and you did a training, a webinar for them that was very, very helpful, very instructive as well, which again fortified my position to call you because yet again, so I mean, you and I actually service similar populations, so I thought that was really, really good, and that's one of the tenets of that organization is to still work with clients, even though they're still using. And I agree with you 100%. You meet the client where they're at, and I don't have to have that pre-existing condition that the person be sober, nor do I believe that the person has to be in recovery necessarily to work with someone, you know? That's struggling. So I don't know what your stance is on that. Are you pretty open and fluid on that one, or are you believe that folks?
Yes.
Go ahead.
No, I'm exactly like you because I don't want to turn anyone away. If they've reached out for help, why would I say to them, I can't help you because you're not done using drugs? Right. Why would I say that? Because it took a lot for them to reach out in the first place.
Right.
I don't want to turn them away. Yeah. And number two, I don't think it's necessary for them to be totally sober because even if they go through detox and go through treatment, 9 times out of 10, they're coming to me on something. Seroquel, Wellbutrin, Xanax, whatever du jour of the day medication is, they've been put on it. So I don't care for that either. So to me, that's not sober. Neither is Suboxone or Methadone or Vivitrol. But they come to me on those things. So...
Right.
My thought process is whether you come to me on cocaine, heroin, Suboxone, Xanax, Seroquel, it doesn't matter. You're on something. And it doesn't matter to me what it is. I'm going to help you either way.
Exactly.
Now how do you gauge, how to pull the trigger for where they're at in terms of willingness? And do you have, I'm sure, like a lot of coaches, sometimes you do have to walk away as a coach when somebody is not willing or doesn't pull that trigger. How do you gauge that in your practice with people?
How do I fire clients? Yes. Okay. So here's the thing with me. I would tell everybody up front, you're hiring me, but I don't work for you. I work with you. So at any time, I feel like I'm chasing you to have a session. I'm chasing you to find your homework. I'm constantly reminding you, like your mother, to pick up your socks. This relationship is not going to work. And I will let you know, what we need to do to correct it. And if you don't correct it, I'm also going to let you out of your contract and give you a refund because we're not a good fit. I don't want to be your mother. I want to be your teammate in your life. So they know up front. And I've only ever fired 2 clients. One I fired, after she said this to me, I said, I'm not the coach for you. She said, mommy was paying about $14,000 a month for her apartment, her car and whatnot. And I said to her mom, you got to stop sending her this money. It's ridiculous. $14,000 a month. She doesn't need this. And mom didn't want to cut her off. So I convinced mom for me to continue working with her. She has to cut her off. That's it. Because she was using pretty heavily. So the daughter got on the phone, started screaming at me, my fault. I'm all kinds of names. I said, okay, that doesn't faze me. But then she said, you wouldn't understand because these are rich girl problems. And I stopped and I said, you're right. I don't understand. You need a job. You're 35 years old. You need a job. That was my conversation. I said, I don't think I'm the right coach for you because I don't have patience for that. And I called her mom and I said, got to go. And she said, why? I said, this girl's 35 and never had a job. You pay for everything and complain. All she does is drink and get high. What do you want me to do? You won't cut her off. She's blown through her trust fund. She's using her sister's trust fund. What do you want me to do? There's nothing I can do because you guys are not willing to make the changes.
Right. Exactly.
And you're wasting my time and your money. So I gave her a refund. And then I fired another client because he crossed the line and basically said I was very attractive and, I don't know, wanted to date me or something. And I said, okay, it's time to refer you out, and referred him to a male coach pretty quickly.
I'd like to sign up for that position, by the way. That's the second time my gender has played out this morning. So just if you need anybody.
Oh, that's
We had another discussion earlier about some challenges women had in another country. But anyway, but seriously, that's a good reason to terminate. Somebody can't think with a clear head about their goals and they have another agenda that could be.
They don't.
That's not a good deal.
Boundaries, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I can't ethically take somebody's money once that happens in either situation. Because in the first situation, I can't help you because you're not willing to do anything like that. So me talking to your daughter is going to do nothing but waste my time and your money. And in the second case, it's not ethically good for me to keep that client because it's going to escalate. And then it's going to get ugly when I have to say, I'm married, no thank you. And then we have the whole level of rejection and abandonment and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, it just gets sticky. So coaching in terms of the skills and your training, are you a pro of continuing your education and your training, or are you sound like somebody that's pretty solid, straightforward with your skill set in the field of addiction? How do you feel about that in terms of more education or accreditation? Because that's a hot topic in the field of coaching.
I love it. I actually, the PhD program I wanted had life coaching in it, and that's why I took it. I had started my PhD about 10 years ago, and, in a live school for clinical psychology, but I really wanted more coaching, and I wanted something big. And I already had my master's, and I said, there's really nothing out there. And I found a school that did coaching and clinical psych, and I got my PhD in that. And it really melded the two for me for the first time really, really well. So I believe, more education is better. And I've never stopped learning. I keep learning everything I can. So when I created the Addictions Academy, I really wanted to offer a bigger product. So like we have Recovery Coaching 1, for the second company in the U.S. to come out with recovery coaching, with CCAR being the first. And they do peer and we do professional. But I also came out with a level 2. And then I came out with a supervisor credential, all because I want the people out there to have more training.
And it's NADAC approved. It's NADAC approved, right?
Some of the courses. Yeah, they approved level 1. Yeah, the manuals. They've approved 13 of our manuals, I believe, total.
Okay.
And then, we're approved through a whole bunch of different places. The AACT, the IAAP, State of Florida, Florida Board. Yeah, so I really want to offer more to everybody. And I think, education is super important, even for me. I mean, I'm learning all kinds of stuff. I'm going to go take Don Ruiz's 4 Agreements training because I want to learn more. Yeah.
That's wonderful. That's a great book.
So my whole point in life is you should never stop learning. The teacher and the student are interchangeable. So there's nobody at the top of their career in addiction. Nobody knows the most of anything. Everybody should always be learning something new.
What's the average time frame that you work with your clients?
I like 6 months. I like fast track, but I have some that are a year because they have longer term goals and they need to get from point A to point B.
So that's good. So it's about 6 months.
I like 6 months. 6 months is average.
Yeah. I think 3 to 6 is about the average. Depends on the client, where they're going, what they're trying to accomplish. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, I think that's really good. And again, Callie, man, I mean, hats off to you. I mean, the addictionscoach.com website with various offerings, along with the Addiction Academy site, man, that those things just cross-link well together. You got allied treatment places. You just really done a fantastic job with your internet, you know, with your internet sites, and really just a marvelous job. How long did that take for you to finally get it to where it's at? Was that just kind of a work in process as the years went on, or you're able to kind of?
Well, I had been in and out of private practice, oh my God, forever. And I finally, well, I've always been like working for someone else or subcontracting and having a few private clients. And in 2012, I took the leap of faith and just went total private practice because I was done. With all the nonsense in the industry, I was just done. And I didn't want to be part of any more of that. So much unethical stuff, so many people stealing each other's clients, misbilling, inappropriate behavior. I just had enough. So when I went into private practice in 2012, it was just me. And I was just doing coaching and therapy. And I picked up a huge client. And my very first huge client, I was sitting in the Hollywood Hills on the floor of her kitchen going, holy God, how'd I get here? And I'll never forget it. She looked at me and she's like, oh, by the way, I want you to meet somebody. And she brought an even bigger player in the front door. And I stood there and I went, wow. Okay. And then from there, it became word of mouth. This is who she is. This is what she does. This girl had never been clean. And she'd been in 6 rehabs and I got her clean. And everyone was like, what did she do? What was the magic? And I'm like, there was no magic. It was her. You know, she did all of it. I just was there. You know, I just hung out. And they kept saying, what's this magic, you know, magic thing you do? And I said, there's no magic. It's supporting the person and getting them to be empowered and getting them to take charge of their recovery, which is the opposite of what you learned in rehab. And the more I did that, the more success I got, the better I got, the more people said, how are you doing this? And that's when I created the Addictions Academy for those classes. It was kind of, here's how I'm doing it. Here's the tools I use. And even my intervention techniques are completely different than anyone in the industry. I do an intervention in 6 hours, and it's all sales training. And everyone is usually shocked because they say, you know, if you ever watch the show Intervention, at the very end, they say, will you accept this help? I hate that. I cringe. They asked me to be on the show. I said, absolutely not. They said, why? I said, I won't say that. I never say, will you? You shoot yourself in the foot. You say, how are we going to make this happen? You know, you use open-ended questioning. And everything about what I teach is different. And that's why I think people gravitate towards me in the classes.
You know what I love about you is that you found an approach that works and you're sharing it with and teaching it to others. I mean, that's to me very, very amazing. That tells us who you are, you know?
Yeah.
Hey, Callie, tell us a little bit about that 3 to 7 day, that mobile rehab. Is that part of what you do as well? Yeah.
Yeah, this is my signature product. So with my high profiles, a lot of them do not want to do treatment. They're open to maybe 5-day detox if I can get them in the front door. Beyond that, they're not going to treatment. So I've created a program that melds therapy and coaching where I can come to them wherever they are and do 3 to 7 days intensive work with them, one-on-one. No groups, no meetings, no nothing. Just me and them for anywhere from 3 to 7 days. And it gets to the root cause of what's happening, and it gets all that stuff out. And then once we start working on it and getting somewhere, I pop in a recovery coach 24/7, and they're there for 3 weeks, sometimes 4 weeks, and then I still do daily calls with the person. So we're still doing all the work. They have the person in front of them doing the coaching that's there 24/7, and they still have me. And then we add in the meetings and all that other stuff if they want to go. So it's kind of rehab. It's your, you know, leisure in your own comfortable space. Because my goal is to teach them how to life. You know,
well, that's totally individual. That's so individualized. So it's focused on just one person.
Exactly.
Man. Right. I mean, just what a great service line. Professional athletes, entertainers, executives, politicians, other people who need some sort of a rapid, you know, a rapid modality that can't. So, yeah, what a great service line that is. And
I love that idea, the three to six,
well,
the
you
mobile
could market
rehab.
That. Yeah.
It's great. You have a very comprehensive program, very well-rounded, that there's something for everybody who has issues in the addiction arena.
Well, that was the goal. The goal was to be able to be a one-stop shop for everything. So whether you need coaching or therapy or rehab or want to get trained in it, we have everything you need. You don't have to call six other people to get your service platform met.
Right.
So, yeah, between certification, training, sober companions, sober coaching, interventions, mobile rehab, that's really good. I'm just real impressed to see the level of services that you do have. So what's next for you, you think? What's the next step? What's the next? You have any new visions for intervention? Yeah, please.
I've got a book coming out, should be out by June. And then also I teamed up with Angel Bartolotta and AC Slade from the band Dope and the Jenna Tortures. And Angel has a school. It's called the Rock Box in Port Richey, Florida. And he teaches people music. We teamed up to do a music camp to teach professionals how to bring music into the addiction arena. Because a lot of treatment centers are adding these musical components, but they really have no clinical program. It's kind of like, hey, we're going to, you know, play guitar for the next hour, and we're going to talk about it instead of doing group. And we're going to talk about how music makes you feel. You can record a CD while you're here, which is great, but what about the clinical side of music? What about how it affects the brain? What about the dopamine? So we kind of melded the music and the coaching side, and we're going to do the music addiction camp to help professionals understand how music affects the brain and the addicted brain and how it produces dopamine and all those interesting things.
Wow. Interesting. Fabulous.
Man, let me know if y'all open up a 17 to 25-year-old unit. We could fill that thing here with all my weed kids and 420 kids. Yeah, man, sounds great. I want to be a DJ because all these kids, everybody wants to be a DJ. Everybody's into EDM and house and all that other stuff and raves and stuff like that. So I think that, but you know what? That's what they're wired for. That's what's going on. You know what I mean? That's their sense modality, you know? So it makes sense, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we're doing it four times a year at Angel's Place. And it's a 3-day immersion class. So if any of them want to come, tell them to come. We're doing a buy one, get one so they can bring a friend for free.
There you go.
Yeah. Learn how to do it. And good.
Definitely. Well, you know, we're about ready to wrap up.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for coming on the show. Thank you for sharing everything.
Oh, yeah, you're very welcome.
Thank you. We'll put up links to your websites and whatnot on the LA Talk Radio Concierge Coaches Show site, and I'll hit you up with a link to that, and the podcast will be up here in a little bit, and listeners will be able to hear Callie and again and again and again talk about all the things that she offers, and I know I'll be revisiting this show myself. So thanks for calling in, Callie. We'll talk to you soon, And again, just love to have you on the show. Maybe have you come back sometime.
Yeah, thank you for your time.
Awesome. Thank you. Have a great day, guys.
All right. Take care.
All right.
Bye. Bye-bye. All right. Well,
fabulous.
That was
Mad.
Yeah,
she's accomplished so much in a short time. And you could just, you know, feel her energy and passion for the field she's working in. That's just wonderful. Very comprehensive program that she's developed.
Yeah. And it's just so much fun for our listeners to hear yet again another facet of coaching. And this, you know, this whole addiction coaching, I really loved how she wanted to center around addiction and addiction issues. I think that's good. You know what I mean? She's right there. She's not the eyelash threader, dog walker, life coach.
Right.
Woman with the mission, rather.
The whole field of sobriety and recovery, they really are training up a lot of coaches. Mm-hmm. And so it is a very, very big growing field for coaches. Yeah. So, once again, just showing Bruce what, you know, the reason we started the show was to educate people on the benefits of coaching, what can it do for you individually, and also how diverse it is as a growing profession.
And folks, keep coming back to the show because we got some great guests lined up here for the, you know, 2017. I mean, just when I think, another great guest comes and avails themselves to myself and Cindy, and we're very grateful
for the people that take time. They take time to share what they're doing in the field of coaching, and we just really appreciate our guests as well as our listeners out there, and wishing everybody a really happy rest of the Tuesday.
Yep. Have a good week, everybody. And don't forget to see us at the Concierge Coaches Show on Facebook. I'm at Cameron Coaches on Twitter and ConciergeCoach.net. And Cindy, where can you be reached at?
WisdomFoods.com and at 714-943-6206. Hope everybody has a fabulous day.
Have a fabulous day and a fabulous week. We'll see you next week here on LA Talk Radio on the Concierge Coaches Show. Have a great week, everybody.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Cindy DeFerdinand, only on LA Talk Radio.